Hello, Voices of Wrestling listener. Dave Ryan here. Have you ever wondered to yourself how many hidden gems are hidden away inside the last years of World Championship Wrestling? Have you ever asked yourself how many tenuous gags can be made about the name Mike Enos? And have you ever thought about what it sounds like for two Irishmen to interpret a very chaotic company through its B-show? The answers to all this and more are just a click away. Check out Days of Thunder every second Thursday on the Voices of Wrestling podcast network.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me is the Interference King himself, Fred Moreland. How are you?
I'm good, doing well, man. How are you?
I'm good. Fred, did you know that we are only, after this episode, four away from our 100th episode of this podcast?
That is pretty absurd.
Very absurd, but it's also very cool that I have actually been able to deal with Fred for almost 100 episodes. I deserve a medal.
That is an accomplishment.
Very big accomplishment. And what also was an accomplishment is AEW reached their five-year anniversary with their sixth rendition of Double or Nothing this past weekend. Fred, we have a lot to talk about.
Yes, we do. It's been a busy week. And I think I actually want to go in reverse order. I'm going to start with news, but I'd like to talk about a couple things off of Dynamite just briefly before we get to the pay-per-view.
Okay.
So some AEW news I think we should hit. First of all, Adam Copeland broke his tibia in his match with Malakai Black on Double or Nothing. That's probably the biggest AEW news coming out of the show. He will be out for a while. I think it's going to require surgery, which obviously will mean even longer. My wife and I were actually talking about this earlier this week, and we were saying that it's good he didn't tear any ACLs or MCLs or anything like that. But given that he sounds like he's going to require surgery per the Observer, that might have been a little too optimistic on our parts. So I guess it depends on if he's going to get any kind of fixation on the bone or if there's any ligament damage or muscle damage that has to be repaired. But it will be a little bit before we see him, which is a shame because in general, I think his run has been better than expected and he's fit in nicely into AEW and set a nice path for, I think, future WWE life or jumps, or at least an example of what you can hope to see from them. Definitely on the high water side. A couple other updates. I guess the other thing is we're still in this hovering pattern with the AEW and Warner Brothers Discovery TV rights discussions. But Meltzer wrote in this week's Observer that per year figures being discussed, quote, are said to be considerably more than the estimated $110 million per year or slightly more. I don't know why he said considerably more than slightly more in the same breath, but that would in theory take the company into the profitable range. There's talk of figures being between 50% above the current number said to already be on the table. Boy, this is some real deities. I'm not even sure I can fully interpret it. The latter figure in particular would open up potential of tens of millions more annually for talent acquisitions and other expansions in the budget. So they are still discussing it. I think one big holdup is that it sounds like the discussions aren't going through TNT Sports, which would, if they're able to accomplish that, I think would definitely open up the purse strings from Warner Brothers Discovery. Because with if they do end up losing the NBA in particular, they would definitely be, have more money available to play with. Obviously, they're not going to get NBA money. Like, that's obvious. But still, it would be to AEW's advantage, I do believe. But the exclusive negotiating window with Warner Brothers Discovery ends in July. I do think it would be somewhat surprising if they ended up not re-signing with Warner Brothers Discovery, given how much Tony Khan has talked positively about it. But, you know, maybe he should kick the tires a little bit just on the open market to see what is out there. I think that would definitely be to AEW's advantage, but we'll see if that happens or if he goes with loyalty here and is just happy with what they're going to get offered from Turner. Part of the rights negotiations also includes streaming rights for things that aren't available domestically, which could potentially include the pay-per-view cycles or the pay-per-view events themselves, I should say. But it doesn't, Meltzer says it's not really a serious discussion to for Warner Brothers Discovery to acquire those. But, you know, we are in the era of streaming services trying to get stuff still. By stuff, I mean content. I don't know why words are failing me. So that is, I think we're going to see that heat up over the next couple of weeks, and maybe a deal will be signed by the end of July before that window opens. But anyways, kind of, I think that's going to really set the tone for AEW moving forward, unsurprisingly.
Yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how TNT ends up handling these negotiations, because obviously if you go through TNT Sports, you're going to have a bigger pool of money to draw from. But at the end of the day, I still expect $200 million. That's what I think they're going to get. And Dave Meltzer and the Observer said that I don't know who projected $110 million or where that number specifically came from, but he did say that they're expected to exceed that pretty easily. And I just don't see a world where they're going to get less than what SmackDown got. SmackDown got it 5 years ago, albeit network television, but right. It's only one show for 2 hours. This would be at minimum 5 hours of programming, maybe a sixth if they make Dynamite 3 hours, plus any pay-per-views or streaming only specials, because I think we need to keep that in mind. They may do the Impact route where they have your base pay-per-views and then they have streaming only specials, because when Impact did have the 12 pay-per-view year calendar, they kept a lot of those names, but they just made them streaming specials on the TNA Plus app. And I think that is an important distinction when we have these nuanced conversations, because Turner may just decide, hey, we want to make Max more of a streaming platform, and we want people to go there as a destination for live entertainment. Whether they classify this as a sports-based presentation or not, they want live stuff on their streaming app, and they want people to have a reason to own it other than just the back library of all the awesome HBO shows, which, let's just be real, is good enough to own, to have HBO Max. Right. That streaming platform is incredible. But this is good for AEW. Their ratings are consistent. If you think their ratings are bad, you don't understand the television landscape. They're great for what block they're in every single week across all three shows, with the occasional outlier. They're beating everything but live sports. And when we're talking live sports, we're not talking game 70 of the MLB season. Right. We're talking game 5 of the NBA playoffs. We're talking game 7s. We're talking big boy stuff. So Turner's obviously very happy with it. And look, 5 million people aren't watching a program anymore. This is not 1997. And you have to get that out of your head. You have to judge it based on the current landscape. We talk about this all the time in the world of football. You can't judge the numbers of a quarterback in 2023 to a quarterback that played in 1975. The rules are different. The landscape is different. The athletes are different. You have to be able to judge within the context of what you're looking at right now. In the context of 2024 television rankings, 750,000 and a 0.24 is top 5 on the night every single week on Wednesdays. How can you not be happy with that? Would you like more? There's a very fair argument for that. But when you look at the landscape, you got to be happy with what they're bringing in.
Yeah, I agree. And I think it's pretty clear that they're a television success, and I think they will continue to be one moving forward. But you know, it's big time for AEW. You know, you got to get as much money as you can out of them, essentially. And they're going to keep working on it. And Yeah, I am very interested to see if we do actually get a deal before that exclusive window ends, because I think there's a pretty good chance that that they will just stick, that they won't even bother going to the open market, which for better or worse, I would undoubtedly go to the open market myself, but I also know why you would just want to take the bag and secure the future. So we'll see.
Yeah, it's going to be fun to keep an eye on. And the reported date for the end of the exclusive negotiating window is, I believe, the end of July. So once August hits, AEW will be able to negotiate with anybody, but they can't negotiate with any partner with WWE, which means they can't negotiate with anybody with Comcast NBC. They can't negotiate with Netflix. So it does limit who can go after this property. I don't think ESPN would be interested because of their deals with both Major League Baseball, NHL, and NBA. Maybe Fox would be interested, but nobody watches Fox Sports 1.
It's in all kinds of houses, but no one watches. And it's
Because it just kind of came out of nowhere. And they did really try pushing hard, and they brought in the legendary Canadian Sports Center team of Jay Onright and Dan O'Toole. Those guys are great, but they were mega stars in Canada, and they just did not move ratings here. Like, Fox Sports 1 has tried, just hasn't worked.
Yeah. Other AEW news, Jake Hager, Arn Anderson, and Mark Henry are all their contracts are not being picked up or renewed by AEW, so they should all be on their way out shortly. I think Anderson's contract expires today. Henry's expired back on Tuesday. I'm not entirely sure when Hager is if it has already expired or if it's soon, but all three will be on their way out. None obviously were really doing anything regularly. I think Hager's time as a valuable roster member was more or less over. I could see him being brought in for very short term storylines, but with Jericho moving on to having Big Bill as his muscle, kind of slotting into that Jake Hager spot, arguably a younger and arguably better talent. I think that's probably the right move. Henry, I think he ever really worked out as an on-screen guy, and I'm not entirely sure what value he was adding other than that. You can never really speak to backstage stuff, but clearly they couldn't come to any kind of agreement or whatever. Arn Anderson also had not been on screen really for a couple of years, probably. Since shortly after Cody left, he aligned himself with Wardlow for a short period when that just didn't work out. Of course, Brock Anderson left the company last August. So all three guys out, I don't think it'll really affect anything for AEW at all moving forward. Jeff Hardy per Matt Hardy. Matt Hardy says he thinks Jeff's AEW contract expires mid-June or so. I personally would not be extending that contract, but I guess we'll see what happens. He's a nice, I think he's basically a nice guy to have around, but frankly, what you pay for him is probably not going to be enable a valuable return on that contract. I don't really think there's much other news. Otherwise, people were healthy coming out of the show. I think Darby Allin may have broke his nose on the double super kick spot. No, he didn't, actually. No broken nose. So he is as healthy as he can be after being hit by a bus a few weeks ago and then wrestling. And I think that's basically the big stories for AEW this week. One bad news. Tony Khan said in the press conference after Double or Nothing that he has had interest in adding AEW mixed tag team titles, which we absolutely do not need.
Can the mix be humans and gorillas?
I just, let's bring in bears.
We have a boulder and a bear.
That's true. I just think there's no good here, you know, like nothing positive will come out of that. And hopefully that's not a thing that happens, but well, I guess we'll see. Other than that, I just want to talk about a couple of things on Dynamite this week real quick, and then we'll get on to Double or Nothing for our big review. One, how awesome was that main event gauntlet match?
I love Mystico so much.
This is like exactly what AEW should be doing. Like just extremely cool shit like this. And I just loved it. I thought it was so fun. Claudio, nearly called him Cesaro. Claudio swinging literally everyone and then trying to swing Bryce Remsburg during a commercial break was top tier stuff. But it was a really well worked match and everyone in it was awesome and it was a blast. I loved it. I think I went 4.75 on it. Yeah, I did.
4.5 plus.
I think that's perfectly fair. I get people go lower. I think that's fair on this match. You could argue there's just, you know, not. There was too much going on, or I guess stuff like that, if you're not into that style of match. But I thought it was just so much fun. You got a bunch of guys mixing it up that you usually don't see. I mean, Leo Rush, Hechicero, Mystico, Shota Umino, Orange Cassidy, Claudio, Will Ospreay, Jay White, and Pac all in the ring together is insane. They all worked really hard, did really cool stuff. I loved it. I thought it was just a blast. So.
I have three takeaways from this match, Fred.
Yes.
One, like, I am a huge Shota Umino guy. His strikes looked like shit last night, or on Wednesday. They were bad.
And yeah, he's still developing. He's got some big holes.
I'm wondering if it's a disconnect from Japan, because I've never seen him look that bad in Japan. And I'm wondering if he just doesn't necessarily feel that comfortable working like a more of a, for lack of a less punny term, strong style, and he's just not comfortable working that in the States, where his strikes have looked fine in Japan. I have had no issue with them, but I thought that was a big thing that stood out to me. Two, Orange Cassidy with the Rey Mysterio West Coast pop, I think it was on Jay White, or it was Pac, was fucking awesome. That was just tremendous, and it kind of came out of nowhere. It was crisp. It was explosive. It was technical. Like, you couldn't have asked for better, and for Orange Cassidy to pull that off, I thought was really great. And lastly, I think this is important because we've talked about how a lot about finishers in this company and secondary finishers. Ospreay won this match with the Os Cutter.
Yes, he did.
Win it with the Hidden Blade. He did not win it with the Stormbreaker. He won it with the Os Cutter. And I thought that was a really important note to keep an eye on moving forward, because you know what? He has now beaten somebody with it in AEW. He's only had, what, like 7 or 8 official AEW matches. Maybe it's closer to 10 when you look back at past Forbidden Doors and like the tags and stuff he did with United Empire.
Yeah.
But damn, that was a pivotal moment, winning it with the Os Cutter. And I think the pin was on Orange Cassidy, which now Will Ospreay's got 2 pins over Orange Cassidy. I do think the time has passed with Orange Cassidy, but now you have a little bit of a story that you can build on moving forward if you want to, where Orange Cassidy just continues to lose. And maybe that's like the start of Orange Cassidy getting the international title off of Will Ospreay. Just something to keep in the back of your head.
Yeah, I'd like to think this is a company that still remembers the past. You know, they used to be really good at that early on, at, you know, letting something happen and then a year later being able to build on it. And I'd like to think they still do that, or at least consistently. But yeah, this was, I thought it was a blast. I also thought it was very funny where you had for just a very brief second, Mystico try to get his heat back. Because as soon as Swerve's music hit, they cut back to Will Ospreay in the ring, and Mystico was trying to do like a stare down with him.
I love him so much.
It's so great. It's great. Ospreay said something to him. I'm not sure what it was. I didn't go back and like try to do a John Boy or anything here. But Yeah, he, like, Mystico did get out of the ring and didn't try to do the whole, you know, nonsense with causing drama or whatever. But it was just a little moment, and it was like, that's Mystico, baby. Other thing I really wanted to talk about, I thought every other match was like right at 3.5 stars, like all pretty good. Worth watching if you have time. Monet just so much better than Sky Blue, and a lot of the women's roster in the ring. But the other thing I really wanted to spend time on, and also just real briefly, Stokely and Chris had a great promo backstage. I'm looking forward to heel Chris. Okay, real thing. Kazuchika Okada. God, he's just really good at this character. Just so good. The thing with the Lamborghini backstage, they're like, oh, this is for you, Okada. They're in the ring, and Okada starts like acting like he's crying. He covers up his face. He goes, I love you guys, thank you. He's right to the camera. Without being at Steve for 3 years to learn how to work the hard cam, has his face covered, and then just drops his hands, and he's just full-blown stoic, just like no expression on his face. What a guy. What a character. I just love it. Just love it.
God, I love Okada. I love him so much. He is everything we could have ever wanted.
Just perfect at being on American TV, man. It's just a blessing. Just a blessing to have Kazuchika Okada in wrestling at all, frankly. But
we're going to talk about Okada because him in Anarchy of the Arena was fucking funny as hell. I love it so much. Let's get to this AEW pay-per-view, Fred. And how do you want to attack this? Because I think there's a lot of macro to discuss with the show and a lot of micro.
I'd like to focus on the macro. I mean, we can bench it at what we thought about matches as we go along.
Okay.
But I think the thing that I really came away with this show was I wasn't hepped up about the build. I mean, I'm not saying it was awful. I just thought there wasn't anything that really landed as a well-built match, as a really well-built match. But on paper, it looked like a great card, and it had, you know, the possibility of having, you know, another AEW like 9 or 10 out of 10 pay-per-view coming out of it. And the build under-delivered on the card, and I also think the show itself under-delivered on the card. And I think a major issue, and I wrote an article about that this week on voicesofwrestling.com, about how AEW had the Double Nothing show, at least, had a major interference. And what I wanted to title the article was Double or Nothing had a bullshit problem. That was changed on me. Something less, I guess, eye-grabbing. But the underlying point remains the same, is that, you know, there was just a lot of bullshit on the show. And, you know, I think that there was two matches that were just basically really had none in it. And that was Orange Cassidy and Trent Beretta, just an absolute mid-card nothing match. And then, you know, arguably Anarchy in the Arena, which is just completely built around just, you know, doing nonsense, bullshit, whatever you want to call it. And but like, it was baked into it, and so it was very, you know, much, you know, not a problem, I thought. But I did think the show in general was a overall, it was less than the sum of its parts. Despite, I thought, several good matches, it was entirely too long. It was, as an East Coast sucker, it was hard to get through it. By the end, I was tired by the end. It was, I would say, ideally would have been an hour shorter. You had a little fat you could trim, some stuff you could just, like, we're doing this on the big night afterwards, give people some reasons to tune in. They didn't. And I thought there were some very questionable decisions in terms of how they structured some matches that I think really kind of kneecapped them. So what were your thoughts overall?
Man, this is... You know that kid in elementary school that you can get to believe literally anything? That's just the most gullible person in the world.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like Tony Khan's turning into an adult version of that kid, but instead of being gullible, he just believes what people tell him. Like, okay. Oh, this is good wrestling. This is how things should be. Like, dude has too many of the wrong people in the room, and he needs more people like Cody. I know that they had their own spat, and I think Brandy had something to do with it. But he's got to get more people like that in the room, because some of this WWE shit is just, it's driving away the core audience. And the frustrating part is the whole thing was, we are an alternative. We are not WWE. And they're going more for modern day sports entertainment rather than Mid-South Tony.
Mm-hmm.
We need more Mid-South. We need more world class. We need more Mid-Atlantic. We need less WWF. And that's not to say you can't do some things that WWF has done. You're going to do that. It's fucking pro wrestling. But you wrote the article about all the interference. And two swerve turns where you had the House of Black. Yeah. You had the House of Black doing the swerve on Copeland, and then you had Stat doing the swerve on Willow,
which we're going to talk about. Matches.
We are going to talk about Willow. Oh, yeah. God, we are going to talk about Willow. One of those is fine. Like, I actually am.
I don't think it really would have been a disaster if you did just one, but I think neither really made much sense.
I disagree. I think the House of Black one was really well done because they had built up to it.
Mm-hmm.
They had teased it, and then the crowd bought it. And then, of course, like it was just a setup. And I thought that was really good.
I must have. I've been traveling a lot, and so my collision watching is down. So I may have missed the angle that set that up. But so that's on me if that's the case. But
how dare you, Fred? You've been too busy playing Scrabble.
busy in July.
It's one of those things. I think if you only had the interference spot, like, look, you were going to have the interference with the barbed wire cage match. It's a barbed wire cage match. And I know people are mad about, like, them leaving the cage and the interference. I don't give a shit. Dude, it's a barbed wire cage match with gimmicks. The barbed wire cage itself is a gimmick on a gimmick. So I don't have an issue with, like, there being weapons in there. I don't have an issue with the interference. To me, this is AEW's Hell in a Cell, and Hell in a Cell has always been really tropey for WWE, but they busted their asses in this match. They worked
very hard.
Yeah.
I think it's fair to say that they don't have to follow the path of Hell in a Cell and just, like, be like, well, now the cage, whatever. It just does. It's wrestling. Who cares? I agree with you, honestly, in a vacuum, I think it's fine to have this, but also in the reality of the show in totality, you know, we had Anarchy in the Arena, which was going to be a bunch of, you know, props and nonsense and weapons and stuff. You had the steel cage match, which I think those two alone might have been fine, but then you also had the FTW match, which was absolutely just like, you know, it was specifically like aughts hardcore match on like SmackDown or something, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm not saying that was, I don't think that was an awful match. I thought it was kind of like just there, you know, too long and kind of disappointing. But it wasn't a disaster, but like having all three of those matches on the same show, I think really undermined the entire, like, I don't think it was necessarily, it was just like a bunch of, all right, we're going to do kendo sticks in one shot or one match. And then we're going to do a table bump in another and a whole bunch of bullshit, after the earlier bullshit. And then, we got Anarchy in the Arena in the main event, folks. And to me, like, this should have been a show with, like, minimal of that stuff, minimal amount of that stuff outside of the main event, because the main event is that. It's nothing but that. And I feel like it really undercut that. So I feel like that was bad booking.
I think you should have kept the juice spot. I thought that was awesome. I thought it worked really well with, you know, like, his return. Mm-hmm.
In the trios match. Yeah, there's like examples on this show that, you know, you can label as bullshit, and I did. You know, I think the even more than juice, as much as that makes sense, but I thought the Christian Cage match, like, you know, there's going to be bullshit in that. That's part of the deal with the whole act with Christian Cage, is he's out there with his entire crew, Nick Wayne, Killswitch, and Mama Wayne, and that's the whole act. That's fine. I get it. I don't know about that in a vacuum. But also, at that point, it was like 4 hours into the match, and they did a very slow pace match, and it was just the wrong time on the wrong show. There's no way they should have just devoted this entire match to the way they structured it with... honestly, they kind of structured it like Christian Cage was the better wrestler, and Swerve Strickland had to overcome the odds and to just survive against Christian Cage. And they should have structured the match like Swerve Strickland was clearly the better wrestler, and Christian got, you know, some hope spots, or whatever you want to call that for a heel, some heat spots where he cheats to take over for a while. But it should have been like 10 minutes shorter. And it should have been much more definitive that Swerve Strickland was the better wrestler, I think, especially for a first defense against a guy that I think is clearly, in terms of like the internal ranking of talent on screen, in terms of push for AEW, I think Christian is obviously like at a lower level, and that's not a knock on him. That's just where he's positioned right now. I thought that was pretty egregious. Another one that I thought was really poorly put together was the... one I was actually very excited for heading into the night was Jon Moxley and Takeshita. I thought their match had a chance to really rock. I was very excited for it. And instead, it turns into a limb work match, which isn't bad in theory, but it was, you know, again, this was match number, and not even counting the pre-show, but match number 6 on a show. It just was very, it was kind of methodically paced. It wasn't particularly exciting, despite having two all-world level guys in there. And I thought it was really disappointing in terms of just match quality.
That Moxley to catch the match sucked.
I would say it sucked. But
Hold on.
3.5 on it. But in terms of what I expected, it sucked.
That's what I mean. Context.
There you go. You gotta add the context, then, buddy.
That's a collision ass match.
Yeah.
Like, Moxley should be having that match with Dax.
I would expect better on collision too between these two, you know?
Like, Jesus Christ. Like, you built up an arm match? Why? Whose stupid idea was this? I need receipts.
Yeah, and they have all these guys now under contract. You know, between like Will Washington and Mercedes Moné's Jennifer Peterman or whatever it is. I forget. Peppermint. Yes. Thank you. And the various agents they have working backstage and everything. And they can't get them all together, you know, to be like, hey, what's the plan for tonight? Oh, you want to do interference and you want to do interference. Well, let's cut it down. Only do it in these matches. Like, here's another one that was just absolutely unnecessary. We all know that eventually there's going to be a Mariah May turn on Toni Storm. Like, there's, you know, there's no question about that. But to kind of interrupt, like, what had been kind of a, I thought it was a very boring match early on between Deeb and Storm, to have like an extended Mariah and Luther fighting over the towel to throw in spot, I thought just really undercut the match. And the match was kind of sage when Storm got in the ring, and then they immediately went to a hot sequence. But it's like, why couldn't you've completely cut out the nonsense there? And
stories, Fred, stories.
We don't need stories like that all the time. You can do that sometimes, I guess. You know, But I thought that one in particular was pretty bad. Another thing that I really hated was then the Ospreay Strong match, which I still loved. I went 4.5 on that. But I thought it could have been much better. And I'm saying that's saying something. But to interrupt that match, just completely stop it in the middle and have Ospreay do a like 2020 NXT style, why am I so violent spot? Where he's like, yeah, I'm going to do the Tiger Driver. I'm setting it up. Oh, no, I can't bring myself to do it. You know, I don't need that, you know. So and also like Orange Cassidy and Trent Barretta was just kind of there. Like, I thought it was like 3.5 stars again, but just kind of disappointing. You know, I thought those two, and also a weird finish. Like, I don't know why you can't just let Trent win that match. You know, I know that, you know, on Dynamite they had Orange turned down the offer from the Callis family, and apparently Trent joined in his place, and maybe they felt that they couldn't do that if Trent just won the match. But you know, you could have still had that whole storyline be just fine with Trent winning, but instead we didn't get that. And okay, cool. I don't know. What I thought absolutely knocked it out of the park and exceeded expectations was Mercedes and Willow Nightingale.
I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop you there. I have a hot take, Fred.
Okay.
I thought Willow was the biggest star on Double or Nothing.
She feels like a huge star. Well, okay.
She came across.
I don't think you can say that versus Ospreay.
She came across like a million bucks.
She did.
She looked like a million bucks.
Yes.
She wrestled like a million bucks.
Well, you know, and also, you know, not to cut you off, but like Mercedes Moné more than held up her side of the end or her side up of the deal. She had a damn good night too.
She was very good in the ring, but I thought Willow outshined her. I thought
Willow feels like a burgeoning superstar. And, you know, if they go from like this Chris Statlander feud, which should be a pretty decisive win for Willow, if I was booking to her winning the women's championship and anointing her as like a top level person on the roster, completely fair. I think that's totally fine.
If you don't have Mariah May winning the Owen, Willow needs to win.
Yeah.
And Willow needs to then beat Toni Storm.
You could have Mariah May betray Toni and win the title by the time we get to All Out, or All In, I should say, and then have Willow be the challenger there after winning the Owen. I think that would be fair.
And then you have Jamie Hayter come out, and then you get a stare down, and then that is your main event for Grand Slam, or All Out even. Maybe not All Out, but you could main event Grand Slam with that. Can you imagine the pop Jamie Hayter would get returning at Wembley?
Yeah, I mean, I've been looking forward to her. I thought it was like a year ago now that they were talking about her possibly returning. We're still, you know, waiting on her. I hope she's able to return by then. Because it's been so awfully long.
I think she dropped the title to Toni Storm at Double or Nothing last year.
Yeah, I think that's right. But yeah, she is needed just because she's so damn good.
I know.
But yeah, I thought overall this was a pretty disappointing show, and I'm saying that as a guy that still gave it a 7 out of 10 overall, which is a good rating. I think that if wrestling at this quality was on a WWE pay-per-view these days, I think that WWE stands.
This would be rated over a 9 on Cage Match.
Oh, it would be talked about as like one of the greatest things to ever happen in the history of wrestling. And
which, don't get me wrong, good for WWE to have that kind of fan base.
Yeah. I mean, I just think that I think this show just was disappointing because of AEW's track record, because of the names on here. Like looking at Cage Match, you know, just to toss out a couple matches, Moxley and Takeshita has a 6.71 on there right now.
That
and
should like be Cage, an 8 plus. Easy.
It should be. Yeah, it should be. Yeah, that's my point. You know, Cage Match ratings aren't everything, blah, 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 all that. But like, it should be that should have delivered much higher. Christian and Swerve had 7.51, which is a nice rating, but still, that should have been 8 plus. You know, Orange Cassidy and Trent at 5.70, I think maybe a little harsh, but still, I don't think that really changes the point that that kind of under delivered as well. And so I just was very frustrated by the show after it was over. And also thought it was, technically it was a good show. But I think there's reasons to be kind of concerned about it moving forward just because of some booking trends you saw in it, some complete nonsense. And actually in my article, when I wrote about the Ospreay and Strong match, you know, focused on the Ospreay, am I too violent kind of thing. I didn't even mention like the whole earlier in the match when Wardlow ran into the ring, like literally, and just like set him up for the airball and just stood there while Tate and Bennett did their best Pat Patterson and Jack Briscoe act for, or Jerry Briscoe act from, you know, the late 90s. You know, like it was just complete nonsense in a match that didn't need it whatsoever. And AEW does not need to be getting in its way of having these excellent matches, which defines it as a brand. And they really need to be sure to not, you know, to not get too close to the WWE style thing, doing things, because they had this problem last year with the MJF, Adam Cole, or Chacho's Reign of Terror. And I think that really hurt their year, and I hurt their business.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich, co-host of the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. We'll get right back to your show. Just want a brief moment to tell you about a sponsor that we have here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network, Arena Club. Now, Arena Club, man, they're great for card collectors. If you're a card collector out there, this is the read for you. And in this hobby, you know, I know you know, it's not easy being a fan of ripping packs or repacks. We hype ourselves up. We think, oh man, here's the 86 Michael Jordan Fleer rookie card. It's going to be in this pack. It never is. It's never in that pack. And usually you don't have zero. You have zero transparency on available cards and hit rates. It's all just a shot in the dark. Until now. Introducing Slab Packs from ArenaClub.com. The only repack that provides real value, a complete view of all possible cards, and clear hit rates for each and every one. And when I buy Slab Packs from Arena Club, it finally feels like I know what I'm getting. And I've talked about before, I go to card shows, I grab random packs, I have fun opening them, but I know there's nothing good ever in there. There never is. There's never going to... Why? That's why they're available to buy, because there's nothing good in there. That's not the case anymore with Arena Club Slab Packs. They're better than those mystery packs, because they have a display of available cards. They have a display of the hit rates. They have a display of the grading. You know exactly what you're getting. It's transparent. And Arena Club, more than that, they're an awesome place for collecting, buying, trading, selling, displaying. If you're a card collector, you get it all at Arena Club. Now, Arena Club Slab Packs are revolutionizing the repack game, like we said, with full transparency. After your pulls are revealed, they'll immediately be placed into your vault for safekeeping or trading and selling, and you can have them officially graded by Arena Club as well. And the Arena Club grading process is great. It's fast, it's accurate, it's transparent, with a full grade rationale provided, an explanation of how your card was scored. You're not putting this thing in an envelope, send it out to the mail, and then get back a number. Oh, it's a 6.2. Why? It's a, whatever. Too bad. We just said it was 6.2. No, you get all of the rationale, all the explanation of how your card is scored and how it is graded. And man, Arena Club, whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform that you have to check out. But there's even better news here, because right now you can get 10% off your first purchase at Arena Club by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Make sure you use that link to get the 10% off your first purchase. Again, arenaclub.com/VOWnet. That is a crazy offer. That is 10% off of your first purchase of anything. If it's a $400 slab pack, you're getting $40 off immediately just by going to arenaclub.com/VOWnet. Anyways, that's arenaclub.com/VOWnet for 10% off your first purchase. arenaclub.com/VOWnet, 10% off your first purchase. And we appreciate them for sponsoring the Voice Wrestling Podcast Network. Now, back to your show.
And they just gotta be unique. They need to stick to what they were doing well. And I'm worried they're moving away from it again after a short period of going back to it. I'm worried that there's forces backstage that have a lot of pull that are just kind of going to keep forcing it going a certain way that isn't to the benefit of the company. And I don't know, man. I got concerns. And on top of all that, I think there's some real, the whole, the thing that really I think is concerning on top of all this is the continued authority figure stuff, which AEW has never done before. Didn't do before. You know, if there was ever like a need for an authority figure thing, they just had Tony Schiavone get house mic and be like, oh, Tony Khan just informed me, da 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 da. And that worked just fine. We don't need an actual on screen authority figure. We don't need power struggles on this show. And it's very derivative. It's stuff that's been going on for 25 years. It's played to death. It's just so overdone. And I'm kind of, you know, I'm saying this as someone who also says that I think the Elite have been good at their roles in this past pay-per-view cycle and on the show. I have no problem with how they performed it, but I also just think that like doing this storyline in AEW feels foreign. It doesn't feel right to the company. I hope they stop it. But with Christopher Daniels being introduced as like an interim executive vice president, which God, and you know, Daniels is good on the mic. I like Daniels. It's not a knock on him. It's not a knock on the Bucks or Perry or Okada or anything like that. But it just doesn't work. It's not needed, and we got to stop it. And instead, I think we're just going to keep going with it. And it's very frustrating. So,
man, I think I'm the outlier here, Fred. I don't really care that they're doing a power struggle storyline like as much as everybody else. Do I love every aspect of it? No. Do I trust that the end result will end up being good? I do. Because this company, for all its flaws and all its issues, has done a pretty good job in the aggregate of making really good stories and the storylines being really good. I feel like we can trust that AEW is going to find a way to make this good. I feel like even though you have a storyline that's been done to death, that they'll find a way to give you a good payoff. Now, I don't love every element of it. I think they are poking some holes in kayfabe, and that sucks. But Tony Khan has made himself an on-screen character in the most minimal of ways, and I think we're overblowing it.
It's not even the Tony Khan stuff that bothers me, though.
No, I'm just talking about everything as a whole. And sure. I think they've done a good job in kind of mitigating some of the holes. Like, oh, the Bucks just tried to name their buddy TNT champion. Well, Tony Khan is King Boss, and he said, no, fuck you. Well, through a proxy. Like, they're figuring out some little nuanced continuity things. Do I want this story? No. I think you can do a lot better things with the Bucks. I think you can do a lot better things with this. But I also don't think it's nearly as bad, and I think people are being a little too hyperbolic because they're just frustrated about that this is a story. I really don't think it's as bad as people are making out to be, and I just had to say that.
That's fair, but I the Tony Khan stuff is minimal. That doesn't bother me so much. I didn't mind when he got dropped on his dome. I thought him driving Darby up as like a really minimal thing for people to get upset about, but also like kind of unnecessary. So I'm kind of splitting the atom there, I guess.
Hey, you know what? He couldn't fly, Fred. He couldn't fly. He had to drive.
That Darby had to drive Darby. You know who it could have been, and I actually think would have worked a little better, is Sting.
No, Sting's done.
Sting could show. They said that Sting could still show up. You know, they talked about
that. I personally think Sting will not show up.
Well, that would have been a fine way to use Sting. That's all I'm saying.
No, I'm not disagreeing. The vibe I got from it is Sting is done. Sting is not connected to the world of professional wrestling like a lot of professional wrestlers are. He is a guy who's a very good professional wrestler. And then once he's done at the building, he kind of turns that professional wrestling mode off. So I think when he retired, he's done.
Maybe. And that's fine. I'm just saying that they did hint at him being involved still, like once in a great while. I think it would have been fine for him to be the one, maybe like some skateboarder instead of Tony Khan. If not, you know, Tony Hawk, then, you know, insert, you know, that's about the extent of my skateboarding knowledge, sadly. But, you know, they could have had some other big name skateboarder drive him out there. You know, there's a, or some punk musician or anything like that instead of Tony Khan. I think that would have worked better. This does remind me of another thing I wanted to complain about. I think some people kind of overstated how big of a deal it is, but I also disagree, I also agree with the overarching point. What's the point of doing the Brood with Adam Copeland? Like, are we really having nostalgia for probably the least good period of Copeland's career outside of maybe that post-pandemic return to WWE? Like,
look, here's my take on it. Copeland wanted to do it. Tony Khan said, fine. They did it. And you know what? I thought they did it about as good as they could considering who the opponent was. Like, it doesn't matter if I don't like it. Some people liked it. Copeland wanted to do it. It's done. It's not going to happen again. I'm just going to move on.
I'm not making a huge deal out of it, but I did think it was.
You are making a huge deal out of it.
I'm not making a huge deal out of it. I'm commenting upon it. That's different. If I was like sitting here and filling my pantaloons with, you know, waste product because I'm freaking out about Gangrel popping out from under the ring, it'd be one thing. But I'm just like, I don't know that we needed to do this, you know. And also, I thought that the Brood theme was production music. And if we're going to do the Brood and not have the Brood music, what's even the point? But like, I just think that like we could have just not done that. But I'll tell you, good old Mal Black not taking the pin or the submission on this one.
All-time hardest, worker,
hardest working man on the show, in one sense. I don't know. It was a kind of a frustrating show despite being a good quality product, I thought. One thing that we haven't talked about yet that we definitely need to talk about is MJF. We haven't got to that promo yet, and I think it's arguably the most important part of the show. So just to recap it quickly, after the Ospreay Strong match, Adam Cole comes out, kind of oddly because, you know, his boy Roddy Strong just lost the championship. And, you know, when Wardlow lost his title match against whoever it was, I've already forgotten, a few weeks ago. Was that Swerve? Did he challenge Strickland, or was it whoever the hell it was? And like they really were like, oh, he really let us down. And then Roderick Strong loses the championship, and like Cole doesn't even say anything about it. But then we get the return of MJF, who tosses Adam Cole from the ring after hitting a gigantic brainbuster. And then cuts a hell of a promo. Now, I will note on this one that, similar to other parts of the show, it went a little too long. It felt like it was ending two or three times. Kind of like, honestly, the best comparison I have is to the Lord of the Ring movies by Peter Jackson. The last one felt like it ended four times, and that was kind of the MJF promo here. But it was a, I thought it was a really promising promo. MJF, you know, was like, I'm not doing this Brochacho stuff anymore. I don't need New Japan or Vince McMahon to make me. And I thought it was a great rah-rah promo. I'm excited to see what he does next. You know, he'll be on Dynamite next week. I am very curious to see where he is positioned. It looks like they're going to do a short storyline with Roosh, which that match should be awesome whenever they do that. But if they keep away, if MJ has actually learned his lesson from what failures of the Adam Cole storyline last year, I think this could be a great year could be, you know, fantastic for, you know, AEW, the return of MJF. I think he's still such an astonishing talent, a great worker and a great promo. Just had some really bad creative ideas last year. And if we can avoid that happening, then I think he's clearly, you know, we're talking about doing the second version, this year's version of the 30 under 30 list. If you're not familiar, last year, Voices of Wrestling, we did the top 30 wrestlers under 30 ballot kind of thing. And MJF was easily number one. And, you know, there's some speculation or some discussion, not necessarily between voters, but just people talking about that, that, you know, we should, or the voters should definitely not have MJF number, you know, high on that list because of how very frustrating and disappointing the Adam Cole stuff was. I can't disagree with that at all in terms of being frustrated and let down by it. But I also think it'd be a real failure to acknowledge his talent level and what he is able to do and what he does do. So I don't know. That's my take. I think MJF's a pretty easy, if not number one vote this year, then, you know, at least a top five guy at worst. But I mean, I can't imagine not putting him number one.
Yeah.
But then the promo ruled.
That was great. That promo was everything I love about All Elite Wrestling. It was real. It was raw. There was no bullshit. Credit to MJF for being self-aware, for understanding that the storyline he did with Adam Cole ran off a bunch of people and people thought it sucked and it was considered by many the worst period in AEW history. Good for him. You know what? It takes a lot for somebody to be that self-aware and be like, yeah. Yeah, that sucked.
You could argue he's being too self-aware, or at least too public. It is amazing to see just how much he's been talking about, the failings or the shortcomings of that reign. I got to send you a tweet real quick. It's from RJ City talking about, or
friend of the show, RJ City,
friend of the show, Royal Jelly City. It's a picture of Eddie Kingston in a wheelchair flipping off the camera, and he's labeled it "The People versus Larry Flint, 1996."
And man, oh that God, is, that's a high level so tweet. Good.
That's really good. best of luck to, I think Eddie's having his surgery next week, so best of luck to him. He probably won't be back until next spring, which is damn, that's a shame. But yeah, he that's a great tweet. Anyways, yeah, that's just kind of, you got anything to add to the Double or Nothing thoughts? Because, you know, I kind of got everything off my chest, I think, at this point.
Yeah, you kind of filibustered this show, Fred.
Hey, look, I had things to say. I was really looking forward to the show. Some weeks I'm just like, yeah, it was a show, we could talk about it. But you know, I thought this was kind of very, I think there's a chance we'll be looking back at this show in 6 months or a year and be like, this could have marked a turning point either positively or negatively for AEW moving forward. And you know, I think that there's some warning signs here. I think there's some little lights on the dashboard blinking, and hopefully that's being noted. I think that there's, you know, I think that there's reason to be concerned about some things. I'm not like panicking, you know, but there's little things popping up that I'm like, I don't know if this is what we want to happen. At least speaking for myself, you know, we'll see where the company goes. I still like a lot. But yeah, I was pretty frustrated by some things.
Yeah, I'll say this. I think it's good that Tony Khan is letting contracts expire and kind of thinning things out. And I hope he does that with guys like Pat Buck and Jimmy Jacobs and brings in, you know, God, you know how great it would be if Ole Anderson was still alive?
I don't know. You know, frankly, I don't know that he could have survived the locker room, or the locker room would have survived him.
Oh, are you kidding? He would have done it, being a good soldier just to spite Vince McMahon.
Oh, I doubt it. He would have stirred shit up within like
of course
2 weeks.
He would have stirred shit up,
but like, there would have been some story.
I want minds like that in the room, where not everything that he did was perfect or even great.
Very, very fun person, by the way. But you know, we're not endorsing the entire life of Ole Anderson. But some traditional thought on things, you know. And I remember an Arne Anderson story talking about I'm probably messing it up now, so I'm gonna withdraw that. But you know, there is talk about like agents not getting together and like discussing what they're doing in their matches, and I thought this was a perfect example of it because there was just way too much nonsense and a lot of repetitive stuff.
Yeah. I want more from this company. This company has already shown us it can be more. Hell, we're just like 2.5 months removed from Revolution having 3 5-star matches on it.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're not exactly far off. And the reason why we're so hard on this company is because they've proven that they can be great. They've proven that they should be great. Why aren't they great? Because they keep getting in their own way.
Yeah. This isn't like CM Punk killing the vibes of the company. And you know, I'm not saying AEW is blameless there. They could have handled some things a little different, but I also think that at some point CM Punk just became determined to, you know, make things as bad as he could on the way out. So that's unavoidable, but I think there's some ways that they could have gone about different things and tried to make it a more manageable problem. But you know, this is just 100% like internal creative decisions causing, I think, issues. And you know, I also want to address something. On Twitter, I got a grand total of 2 negative tweets about my article, which is fine. I probably would have got more if the bullshit problem headline was what was used. Which, you know, whatever. But I think that, you know, people were like, oh, well, when WWE, you know, couple of people were like, when WWE does it, no one says anything on this site. But when AEW does it, someone writes an article. It's like, yeah, there's a reason. Look, the reason I'm doing this podcast and that I've been watching AEW since the start and generally been very positive on the product is because it's different from WWE. And it needs to be different from WWE. You know, otherwise, you're just going to come off as dollar store WWE.
Mm-hmm.
We don't need 2 WWEs. That's the last thing we need. Now, we need alternatives. We need other things to watch, other ways of, you know, approaching professional wrestling. And, you know, I'm not saying that, you know, most sports entertainment is bad or whatever, but, you know, between the authority figure stuff, which I don't think is a positive, I don't think it's really adding anything to AEW, and also the very repetitive, like, and also the concern with the booking part is that they just wouldn't let a guy win. You know, there was never most of the matches in the show just didn't have someone win. There had to be a reason someone lost. And sometimes that's fine. Like, I think that was fine in the Trios match to have Juice Robinson come back and cost Death Triangle. That made sense. But, you know, Christian should have just lost to Swerve 10 minutes earlier, you know. There's just a couple examples like that, you know, less prominent than just the overarching interference. I don't know. This is where I am with things right now.
Yep. I will say, speaking of different ways of presenting wrestling, Dookie, good old Dookie in the semifinals of the Best of Super Juniors tournament.
The Doki Choki.
Oh, the Doki Choki might be the greatest finishing move name of all time, done by Zack Sabre Jr.
I am a Gino Gambino fan.
I love the Doki Choki.
I always enjoy when he shows up. I think he does the right amount of humor without overriding, you know, the matches happening. I have not watched any of the Best of the Super Junior yet. Like, I've just been terribly busy this month, so I'm behind on everything.
Nothing super, super high-end.
Yeah.
I think it was Eagles and Despy. Was that the match that people were all raving about? It's just been a lot of good. Very sad Francesco Akira got hurt I believe it was a torn meniscus. I thought he might be able to make the final.
Yeah.
Because last year they elevated Teton and Master Watto, and then they delivered almost a 5-star match in the Best of Super Junior final.
I think I gave it 5.
I went 4 3/4. I loved it, but it didn't quite get. I think Master Watto's finishing move, where it's almost like a combination crucifix bomb and Uranagi.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that move fucking rocks.
He's really improved, man. He's, you know, I actually was about to write him off when he came back from CMLL, because I remember watching some of his stuff in CMLL. This is really loosey-goosey and not very impressive. And then he came in, and they really, you know, they gave him, I think, initially a bad gimmick. Now the gimmick is he has, like, blue hair, you know, but initially they made him look very much like a dork, which didn't help. And his work, ring work, was not up to snuff yet. And then, you know, last year he showed that he improved greatly, and I'm, you know, that's a really cool thing to see. Like, you know, when you see that, or Yoshihashi in New Japan, who went from like useless, you know, big card guy to like half of the best tag team in New Japan by a large margin. Like, that was awesome. I love seeing that. You know, I love seeing people improve.
Me too. And speaking of improve, that's what we're trying to do every single week here on The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy. And that is going to be our show here today. It's going to be a really interesting month going into Forbidden Door.
Yeah.
And before, or as we close this out, Fred, we need to talk about it. Will Ospreay versus Swerve Strickland for the AEW World title.
That's going to be fascinating.
Is this the most excited you've been for a title match in a long time?
Probably not. It feels like a variant, but like, I'm trying to remember the last time I was really excited. Probably for the
Iron Man
Danielson MJF, maybe something like that.
So this would be the most excited you've been for a title match in a long time.
It's, I guess, a year. It depends on how long a long time is. That's a very philosophical question.
Yeah.
I am very much looking forward to this.
Who do you think wins?
That's fascinating, isn't it? Because I feel like I'm glad they made, you know, we've talked about this a few times now. I'm going to be very clear here. I'm glad they made Swerve the champ when they did. I honestly think they should have done it a few months earlier. But, you know they weren't going to with the MJF story. I mean, there was no chance of it. I think Swerve is a very talented guy. I think he's doing well right now. But I also think that there is a clear differentiation between who's hot right now with Swerve and Will Ospreay. And that's not a fault of Swerve. It's just Ospreay is on another level. And, you know, I think it's just obvious to me that if you were to choose a number one guy in the company right now, I think if you're just evaluating everything honestly, you'd have to go with Will Ospreay. I think that it's a pretty obvious call that Ospreay should be the world champion, but you got the situation, you kind of got to finesse, and not just like, I'm not saying that from a offend anyone way, but I also think you don't want to, you know, make Swerve look like a geek and losing, right? So You got a few options here. You could do a 1-1 kind of deal. You could have Swerve win at Forbidden Door, and then you could have set up the rematch at All In and have Ospreay win in his home country. And I really do think that that's what they should be aiming to do, is have Ospreay win the world championship at All In. I think that would be the best thing for the company, best thing for business, all these things. But I would have that urge to look at this and be like, look, we gotta strap up Ospreay ASAP, because he's the guy. But I can see you doing a little thing with the Callis family betraying him. Then you have, you know, him take care of them and set up the rematch. I think that would be fine. But I think if you go past All In and Will Ospreay is not the world champion, then something has gone wrong.
Yeah. So here's my take and why I'm so split on this, because it's one of many different things. With Ospreay could win because he's Will Ospreay, and you give Swerve, the old school New Japan quickie title run. Mm-hmm. Okada had it for 3-4 months. Naito had it for 2. I think Ibushi had it for just a couple. Same with Ospreay. You give the super quick title run establishes, hey, you're a dude. Evil only had it for a couple months in 2020. So it establishes you are a main event level player. You will continue to be a main event level player. That matters. That matters a lot. And I think that's objectively great. I think it's great for Swerve. I think it's great for I think it's great for AEW. And I also think that it's great for like just the main event scene in general, because you have another big player.
Yeah. I'm glad we're doing this. And I'm excited for it, man. I'm very excited.
On the other hand, you could easily have Swerve win, get a big scalp during this reign, and still do a short reign because he mm-hmm. just won in March. No, he just won in April. Sorry. You hold that belt until Wembley. You allow Swerve and Will Ospreay to go out and deliver a 5-star match and let them dominate. Let them go kick ass. And I think that'd be great. I think that'd be fantastic. I don't know what you do here. I did say when Ospreay won the match against Roderick Strong, I thought they were aiming to have Will Ospreay as a double champion and let him defend both belts because he's got the crowd connection. He is so over. You could have him do both. He's also a machine. Like, you have him wrestle on Dynamite and Collision. Because remember, it's like a, 3 weeks on, 10 weeks or 10 days off kind of deal with Ospreay so he can spend time at home with his girlfriend and kid. It's something like that. Mm-hmm. So you can make that work with a double champion. So he does a pre-tape promo for the one Dynamite where he's not on, and that's no problem. Plus, he's world champion. Maybe they're willing to modify that a little bit. So, hey, maybe you are there on Dynamite. You have 6 days back home, and then you come back for the next Dynamite. And then, hey, we'll give you another 6 days off, and then you do your 3-day stretch. Like, there are ways to work around that.
Yeah.
And I think it's really going to be interesting how they play things with Ospreay, because everybody's like, oh, he's the international champion, you know, like booking malpractice. Why does it have to be? Why can't he defend the international title and the world title at the same time and hold both and be great at both? Because it's fucking Will Ospreay. If you're going to try it, Fred, if you're going to try having an undercard title and the world title on the same person, it's Will Ospreay. Like, yes. This is your guy to do it because of all the things I just mentioned.
Yes. That said, I do think it would not be a problem if they unify this championship away. I just think that, yeah, it would not hurt the company at all. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot of questions, I think, with what do you do? It's really interesting. I think it's fun to talk about. And, you know, it'll be a situation to watch going forward. And I think that that's what's great about AEW, because it does feel like things move to some extent. And, you know, that's cool to see.
Yeah. Forbidden Door is going to be fascinating to see how everything keeps getting booked. In our circle, those who are big fans of New Japan are very frustrated about the relationship between the two.
Oh, I think that's perfectly fair.
I'm not saying it's not.
Yeah. I'm not saying you are either way, but I want to say this real quick. I do think if you're another company, specifically New Japan, I think you do have reason, especially if you're a fan of that company, to be frustrated about the AEW relationship. I think Ospreay and Okada were going to leave regardless, you know, mm-hmm. frankly. But I think that, you know, it's kind of, I can see why you would be frustrated. I don't think it would really give much back to New Japan in terms of guys going to that company. I mean, obviously they let Moxley do it, but that's because they want Moxley and Moxley wants to do it. So they're like, yeah, sure, that's fine. But like, they aren't exactly, you know, do they? They don't even have an intern of the Super Junior, you know?
Yeah,
this year, if I'm not mistaken,
and Blake Christian.
Are we really counting Blake Christian?
Well, it's the Tony Converse, so I'm counting it.
I'm not counting that. Get out here. But like, you know, and there's all these guys in AEW that like aren't really doing anything, you know, that are great. Like, you know, Top Flight hasn't really been featured over the past month. You know, why is there, you know, a reason that they're not over in Japan right now? You know, as an example, just to pick a name out at random, you know, these guys, you know, why is there not, you know, we're the Stardom relationship is building and all that, but like, is there not, you know, like Sky Blue couldn't have been there for the past 3 weeks? She really wasn't doing anything else, and the experience would have helped. Couldn't have hurt, I guess. But I, you know, I think there's reasons to be frustrated about that relationship, and yeah, perfectly fair.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to kind of see what ends up happening with how this show is booked. And I think a lot of that's going to have to do with the IWGP title, where I know there's some frustration that John Moxley is the champion, but let's also remember, like, pre-pandemic, Moxley was a New Japan guy.
Right.
And is he doing as much New Japan stuff now? No, but he's on like every US show. It's harder for him to go to Japan because of how entrenched he is with AEW. But that doesn't mean he, like, it's like he's not a New Japan like every monther, but yeah. He would love to be a regular. And he's been a great asset to the company whenever he's gone over. He's been a great liaison with the American fans. Let's not forget that his title win at Windy City Riot was the highest attended New Japan only promoted show in American history.
Yeah.
Because that drew more than the G1 in Dallas, that drew more than any of their other special shows, that it did not draw more than the show with Ring of Honor at MSG, but that's not a New Japan only show. So like, Moxley is still big within that fan base, and it's not just he's an AEW guy. But so I think he's getting a little bit of unfair treatment, but I also get it because he's not a heavy regular in New Japan. New Japan's in a very weird spot right now. They have all these young guys who theoretically should be ready to be the guy, who could potentially be the guy, but nobody's at the point where they're really like trusted to take that next step, which puts them in an interesting dilemma. And I think having a guy like Moxley have your world title is objectively good. Now, some of the booking, you can have a completely different conversation, but I'm really, really, really intrigued to see what this is going to end up looking like long term. And I'm intrigued to see what the show looks like.
Yeah. And that's, yeah, basically, I agree. So, interesting time for sure.
Very interesting time. And we're going to leave it at that. We're going to have a lot more conversation about Forbidden Door, about the direction of AEW. And after this great Dynamite that we just had, maybe we're in a better spot now than we were before. We'll find out in time, because we're going to see how AEW continues to grow and evolve as a company. And that's going to tell us a lot about what we need to know. Until then, thank you very much for listening. If you loved it, give us a 5-star review. And write a review. Say nice things about me and Fred. Tell us who your favorite football player of all time is. I would love to hear some answers, because everybody knows I cover the world of football for my full-time job. Also, if you love it and you want to decide, hey, let's give Tyler and Fred some money, go to our redcircle.com page in the show notes and then click on the donate link and you can send us a few bucks. Until next time, I'm Tyler. He's Fred. Thank you so very much for joining. We'll talk to you later.
Have a good one, y'all.
Hello there, everybody. It's me, Gary Kidney, the co-host of You've Got to Be Kidding Me on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network.
And I am Liam Jones, my full name, and I am also a part of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network as a co-host for You've Got to Be Kidding Me.
We are a TNA history podcast that covers TNA 1 month at a time. We cover all the drama, all the matches, all the Vince Russo nonsense you could ever want in your life.
Have you heard of TNA? I bet you have, but would it be funnier if two people made jokes over it the whole time? Probably.
So if that sounds like fun to you, check it out on this very Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network, and Liam will do bits and whatnot.